My name is Susan Wilger, and unfortunately, my co-presenter, Sean Bruna Lewis, was unable to make it to out here to California, so I'll be doing the whole presentation. There's rural, like we had from our last presenter, and then there's rural, and we are extremely rural, and I don't know if any of you out in the audience deal with that type of environment, but it is very challenging, and so we want to share with you our experience that we had in doing community participatory planning in an area which is very hard to reach frontier. This community is the border on the south is Mexico, and then it borders the state of Arizona on the west. It's in the southwestern part of New Mexico. So this was a very collaborative project. We've had the good fortune of working with our colleagues from the University of New Mexico. We have Dr. Kakari Stone here in the audience. But then we also partnered with the Prevention Institute that's based in Oakland. And then my organization, we're a community health center. It's Eldaga Medical Services. And then our other partner is a health planning entity in the county, which is the Eldaga County Health Consortium. So those are the four major partners. The purpose of this work is, and the presentation, is we wanted to look at key challenges, especially in the environment that we face, where you're dealing in a very isolated, very remote type of environment. Have folks in the audience heard of the Thrive Survey developed by the Prevention Institute? And the Thrive Survey, it is nationally known, and it gets at social determinants of health. We wanted to take a non-traditional approach to health planning, and so we utilized the Thrive Survey, and I'll get into that a little later. The other purpose is aligning survey priorities, what the people, what the community are telling us, with strategic planning around primary care intervention design and policy development. As a community health center, oftentimes we are the major employers in rural and remote communities, and you have a lot of influence. And so, there's a lot of assets to this type of planning. So just a little bit of background. There's very, very little literature about planning in frontier and very remote and isolated communities. We wanted to also look at the role of community-centered health homes in addressing health disparities. And like I said, we're a community health center and FQHC, and so that's why we wanted to take this non-traditional approach. Usually when we do health planning, we're looking at, okay, what are the rates of health indicators? In our particular county, there's extremely high rates of hypertension, diabetes, obesity, heart disease. We knew that from the stats, but how are we going to address that as a community? So we wanted to take that non-traditional approach and then figure out what is our role as a community health center in trying to deal with social determinants. And then there's the need to align the health homes with upstream assessment tools for community planning and policy development, and this is where the Thrive Survey comes in helping us to address those social determinants of health. So just to give you a little idea, a little picture of what I'm talking about, this is a typical landscape in Eldaga County. It's very remote. The county is, it's a pretty large county geographically. It's about the size of Rhode Island and Delaware combined. The county is, there's 5,000 people in the entire county. Most of them are concentrated in one town called Lordsburg. There's about 2,500 people there, and then there's an additional 4 to 5 little communities that are located throughout the county. There's one full-service grocery store in the entire county. This is a grocery store which is now closed. There's the county population has been decreasing over the last 8 years. There used to be a mining smelter there. That smelter closed down, and so the population is slowly beginning to migrate out of the county, particularly families with children. We have a higher than normal older population and then younger population, but families tend to be leaving because of the job situation. Well, there are no jobs, or limited jobs, I should say. So this is a picture of the county. This is a food desert in the desert. And once again, we do have our challenges. It's a very arid climate. Water, they get maybe 11 inches of rain per year. So growing food is another thing that we look at within the county. And this is a frontier swimming pool, which is a stock pond filled with water. But let me tell you about the project. So we knew we wanted to do community participatory needs assessment. How do we get our population involved? And one thing about dealing with very rural and remote communities is one of their strongest assets is their community members. And so our for the needs assessment, the time period, we started the design and decided on the Thrive tool for the needs assessment around October of 2010, but the real work took place between May and August of 2011. And the process is also very key. I would have to agree with your comments earlier, because the process is really key to making this work. And what we did is, with the distribution, we asked everybody within the county, who do you identify as the leaders? Who do people go to? And we contacted those people throughout the county, and we invited them in for a lunch meeting to explain the process and the Thrive survey. We identified 25 leaders throughout the county. And not all of them showed up. About 15 showed up to the meeting. And we talked about the survey. And we also got their input, because the Thrive survey was designed and it was actually piloted. Eldago County was one of the places that it was piloted back in 2004. But a lot of the examples that people use may not be appropriate to a very rural county. We don't have many billboards. There is a major highway that goes through the county, but in terms of fast food restaurants, that's not a huge issue. So you have to really modify things, modify your images, your examples, and so forth to really make the tool relevant. And so we did that, and we got input from the folks that we met with. And these community leaders, there were about 12 of them that committed to getting the survey done. We had a target. Remember, there's only 5,000 people in the whole county. We had a target to get 200 surveys. And they each committed to going out into their communities and collecting the surveys. And so that happened May through July. And then we collected all the surveys, and then there was analysis that was done. And the Thrive survey, what we're getting at is we're really wanting to deal with those environmental issues, those environmental factors that we know have an influence on the health and safety of the residents in the community. So the Thrive survey, which stands for the Tool for Health and Resilience in Vulnerable Environments, was developed by the Prevention Institute. And what it consists of are three major categories, one dealing with place, where you're getting people's feedback about, you know, what they think about how things are sold and promoted, the look, feel, and safety of their environment, parks and open space, getting around, housing, air, water, and soil, arts and culture. But we also address equitable opportunity, racial justice, jobs, education, as well as people. You know, is there a sense of trust? Do they communicate well? Is there participation? What about people's behaviors and attitudes? And so that's what the Thrive survey consists of. And so that was the these items were the feedback that we were getting from the residents. We were extremely pleased that we far surpassed our target of 200, and we got 357 responses. And the Prevention Institute, who implements this survey nationwide in all types of urban areas, said that this was probably one of their most successful surveys that they had implemented. And there were four recurring priorities. And I'll show you in just a minute. And those are the responses from the communities that we worked with throughout the county, with Lordsburg being the most populated, so obviously we got the most responses there. But the four top areas, and all of these correspond to those elements on the Thrive survey, those various factors, is what was most important to the residents was look, feel, and safety about their county, their environment, where they live, followed by housing, jobs, and the fourth one was education. Education was right behind jobs. So then what we did is we got the survey results, and then we had two planning meetings. One is, once again, we invited those leaders who partook, as well as other various community members. And they helped actually give us a little bit more information around those four major areas. And so here's some feedback that we got around look, feel, and safety, what people thought might be strategies to deal with this, with that particular factor, as well as some of the key players to help address it. And then we also did the same for jobs in terms of potential strategies that we could use and key players, housing, as well as education. So we had this wonderful information and strategies to address these issues. And so once again, being a health center, and this was new for us, we took a new step. We knew that in order to really deal with social determinants of health, what you need to do is you really need to make contact with those key players within the county. And so we started meeting with the county commissioners and sharing the results of the survey. We met with the school superintendent because education and jobs is one of the key areas that the residents had identified. We also incorporated findings into Hidalgo County Plan. What that is in the state of New Mexico, each county is required to come up with a comprehensive plan in order to receive state funding. And they were actually right in the process of doing their plan. So we approached the people who were doing the county plan and said, oh, we have these results from community members, and wouldn't it be great if you incorporate that into your planning, in which they did. They actually took the results and incorporated it into their plan. We had involvement with the regional economic development planning, which is also very key because you're talking about jobs, housing, look, feel, and safety, and education. And so being part of the economic planning is really key in the health planning. And then, of course, searching for funding opportunities, which extra resources is always really helpful. So in December of 2011, after all the results were disseminated, the county put together a stakeholders group, of which our organization was one. Out of that group, there were two subcommittees that were formed. One was called the Pride Subcommittee, which actually identified dealing with areas of look, feel, and safety within the county. So they incorporated and they invited the youth groups. They did community cleanups, and they started identifying parts of the county that were abandoned or very trashy, needed trash, you know, cleanup or whatever. And so that was one group that came out of the county stakeholders group. In February, and as you know, the Hidalgo County Health Council was one of our key partners, and they had been working with us, and they knew the results of the survey. Well, when they got together to kind of identify what their health priorities were as they continued their health planning, they actually, much to our surprise, chose food security and fitness and exercise as their top priority. And we're like, okay, you know, we'll go with that. But we still didn't want to ignore what the community was telling us in terms of their top priorities based on the Thrive survey. In May of this year, and this was real exciting, it actually started out as a we were looking for resources, and there was a national foundation grant, and we were thinking about going for it. We didn't actually pursue the grant, but what ended up happening is we opened up dialogue between, once again, the county, Hidalgo Medical Services, the local university, which is Western New Mexico University, and the school districts to increase vocational training. And so, once again, collaboration in these small communities is so key. It's collaborating where you can get something done that no one entity can do by themselves. And so just by knowing that it was a high priority among several of our folks, they got together and they were able to actually bring in three new certificate programs into the local high school. So our lessons learned is shaping the tool to community context. Like I was saying, the images you use, the wording you use, we did actually modify a little wording with the approval of the Prevention Institute. Examples that you use, that's very key. Integrating findings into community health planning. And when we say community health planning, once again, don't limit it to just the healthcare providers, including economic development, including county planning, and so forth. Expanding the dialogue and action to policy areas. Once again, when you're dealing with these very small communities, collaboration is key, and there's a lot of overlap, and you're dealing with a lot of the same players. So be sure, especially as you deal with social determinants of health, we realize that we had to engage some of the key decision makers. Being at the table when they're discussing economic development was really key for us. And then aligning the primary care approach with population health. In other words, if as a community health center, if we're going to be a leader in addressing social determinants of health, it's we have to kind of step out of just our health lens and really begin to engage in those other areas that impact health.
Thank you all very much for hanging with us to the end. I think this was some very interesting presentations, particularly for any of you who are hoping to engage in such activities in your own communities. We are happy to take questions. They did not bless us with a microphone this afternoon, so don't be shy either in raising your hand or in projecting loudly so that we can hear your questions. Yes, ma'am.
So the question was, what are the data sources we use for our maps? We used Medicaid birth density was one of our maps. Calls for service for 911, that's generally publicly available, so you don't need a data sharing agreement typically. We used teen births. We used low birth weight, infant mortality, domestic violence, child maltreatment, jurisdictional government revenues. So that's a map I didn't show you, but that's typically public use as well. That's it. There might be a few others I'm forgetting, but and we have some new ones I haven't shared yet. We're still analyzing them, but we're looking at healthcare costs through the Medicaid claims reimbursement, and those are going to be hotspot mapped as well.
Would anyone else like to talk about their data sources?
The data sources that we use to collect data, the biggest source is the library. We would actually drop off a lot of surveys and then collect as many as 100 at a time when we came back a week later. Next time they are going to put the survey on the computer so people would actually have to drop the service when we log on. Walmart, YMCA, Health Fair. We had a lot of individuals who would go to their churches. We had doctors that would hand out to the patients, and it was really great. Not only looking at the data sources, but if you know that at Walmart you get 8 to 10 servings per hour, no matter what you promise to people, well, buy your car. They will not come. They're just ready to go home. Then if I'm going to work at 4 Walmart. 4 hours of key, then I'm going to get, you know, approximately X amount of surveys, and that way you can actually, and then the library gives you 100 of these, you can actually map out a really good time source with all of your data, and you can break it down into hours and weeks and sort of understand how to distribute your resources.
Great. I think we had another question over here. Go ahead.
So the question was about other uses of GIS and to bring in more community participation. Our local primary provider for DCF services uses our maps to reallocate his resources. He saw the data and he consolidated 2 buildings worth of staff into 1 building. The cost savings in rent and reduced housekeeping allowed him to hire another person. They're redirecting resources into that resource center. So I think community is already, this is just one example, very engaged with using our maps. Future steps is, I alluded to that earlier, healthcare cost. Why were county commissioners from all political spectrums, why did they always vote unanimously to our resolutions? Why did they always approve what the community requested? It's because you can get results quickly. And within 1 year, we're going to show healthcare savings. That mobile clinic, one of its primary services is family planning. The reason the births are so high in that neighborhood is that there's sabotage of contraceptions from men. They are very controlling, and they don't allow. There's sabotage of contraception, and it's a way to control the women that live in that neighborhood. Unless it's some long-term form of contraception, they will sabotage. They're so controlling that they won't even allow their pets to get spayed or neutered. So the healthcare cost savings by providing IUDs and other family planning, we expect to be in the millions of dollars, and that's we can show that in just 1 year. So when county commissioners are elected on a 2-year cycle, they can say, look, I voted yes for this, and I'm saving our taxpayers millions of dollars. And through the life course, I'm actually expecting a 10 to 100-fold savings in costs. We're just starting to analyze that data now, and I hope to present it at APHA, you know, in Boston. And I hope to have those maps available to share with you. So community is using our maps. There are needs assessments and other things going on that I didn't have time to talk about, but they are using our maps to engage community in a variety of different ways. So, yes.
Can you
Yes, ma'am. Any other questions? Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, so you want to know about the child marriage was more prevalent and what are all the measures we have taken. Okay. Child marriage, as you know, it is in India, not only with the tribal population, even in the general population also, it is a bit of concern because it is widely prevalent, especially on the northern states, like even Jharkhand or Uttar Pradesh or even Rajasthan, where aged marriage used to be for girls, used to be 15.6 to 16, 17 even. By 17, by 18, 90% of women used to get married. So that that is the tradition, and that is the it is prevalent, quite prevalent. And the government is taking serious measures. One is that there is a Child Marriage Act which has enacted maybe some 20-25 years back, but now they are taking it as a very serious issue that those who are marrying before the age of 18. They'll be booked under a punishable act. And but as long as tribe people are concerned, they have their own system, their own traditions, and which is very difficult to break. And secondly, I have mentioned that this study we given out to state government, and the state government has taken it up and created a health communication strategies specifically for tribal people. So in that one there are measures, but measures are not very effective so far. It will take a bit of years to show the results. Yeah. But child marriage is a bit of serious concern as far as even in the general population as well. Yeah.
The floor is open. No? Nothing? Well, thank you very much to all of our presenters, and thank you all for hanging out for the rest of the afternoon.